In either the in the late 1930s, early 1940s, the United States, obviously on the brink of World War II, was especially concerned about foreign spies. Anywhere where there were a large number of Japanese or Germans, there was a concern that there would be spying on the country. They went to St. Charles Borromeo Seminary in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, or just outside Philly, and they approached them, genuinely concerned about the very large number of German descent students that they had. And they said, can you account for your students on a regular basis? And the rector looked at them genuinely and said, well, the doors are locked. They can't leave at night. They're locked. They can't get back in. So we know they're here at night. At 6 a.m., they're in the chapel every morning. They're there until about 7:30, 8 o'clock. We have some quiet prayer. We have morning prayer. We have mass. Then we go to breakfast. They don't have to eat breakfast, but they are required to attend breakfast. They sit there patiently. And from there, we move on to our class schedule. They're in their classes. They take attendance at each of their classes. That's the entire morning. Then they go to lunch, and they're not required to eat lunch, but they are required to attend. So they're present there, and we can account for them. Then they go to their afternoon schedule. They have more classes, and then there's time mandatory in the chapel. We can account for them then. And after their chapel time in the afternoon, we gather again for dinner. They don't actually have to eat dinner, but they do have to attend. And after dinner, we have some recreational downtime that we have together. There's a few places for that, but we know where they are. We can account for them at each of those moments. And then after that, they return to their rooms. There's a mandatory study period where we can account for them then. And then about 9:45, we gather for night prayer. We take attendance there. The doors are locked to the outside world while we're in night prayer, and then they go to bed. And of course, the United States government, who tried to wrap their minds around this schedule that they were just informed, actually kind of looked left and right for straitjackets. But no, they looked at the rector genuinely, and they said, how did you talk them into that schedule? We don't even keep that close to tabs on people in prison. The rector smiled at him, said, made them. They volunteered. It's a fascinating reality when we think about it. If you consider for a moment, I know this story because one day I asked why we had the schedule we did in college seminary, and actually one of the professors, who was a graduate of Charles Borromeo Seminary, smiled and told me that story and said, don't worry, we take our schedule straight from them. They've been using it since almost 1899, so you know, we thought it was a working schedule, so we thought we'd give it a try as well. And of course, this fascinating thing about it is that it was as demanding as it can be, as often as it holds accountability for each and every person present, it does beg that question, why anyone would voluntarily take on a crazy schedule like that? Indeed, we have to consider what it is that would prompt someone to say, hey, you know what I need in my life? I need a whole lot more rules that are a little arbitrary and, you know, compel me to be accountable on a near constant basis to the point where it actually could, in fact, drive me crazy if I could reflect it on them as rules for the sake of rules. So the curious thing about it is that if we just look at rules for the sake of rules, we lose sight of purpose. We lose sight of intention. You know, as seminarians, we volunteer to take on the sexual rule of life because we have this great love of God. We have this great desire to serve God in the priesthood, and part of growing into that is living into the relationship and coming into seminary and living this way of life. We don't come into seminary because we said to ourselves, you know what I really needed? I needed rules in my life. I needed so many rules that even prisoners wouldn't be jealous of me. But if you think about it, it's not even just seminarians that take on such things. Ask any parent if they got really excited at the idea of having a child because what they really wanted in their life was someone who would throw up on them and lose all kind of control over their bodily functions on them and have to wake up at strange hours throughout the night to feed them. And, you know, even after they grow bigger, then sometimes you have to wake up at strange hours of the night to find out things like they crashed the car and all the kind of joy and excitement that comes along with that. I've never met the parent who said, you know what I really want in my life? I want someone who will interrupt my sleep and ruin any kind of regular sleep cycle. I want someone who will ensure that I worry more and get frustrated more often. I want someone who will take away my peace of mind from time to time and fill me with overwhelming dread at the possibility that I have to put this person into a proper adult. I've never met anyone who said that's what they really wanted in their life. I have met a lot of people who said they're really excited about having children. But I've never met anyone who said, I'm really excited about the idea of losing all chances of getting a regular sleep habit. Why? Because it isn't about the restriction. It isn't about the rule placed upon our life. It's about the relationship. It's about that moment of being reminded that we're loved. It's about this clear indication, this clear invitation that we can live into this promise of love with a relationship with someone who cares deeply about us. And it isn't even that we have to lead the way. We don't have to be the first ones to express this love. We don't have to be the first ones to show this love, because we've already been shown this love first. Oftentimes when people approach me, they say, you know, the church, it's just got all these rules, you know, and how do you live with just all of these rules? Well, I've never said, please join the church, we've got lots of cool rules. It's not really the selling point. The whole purpose is that we come into a relationship with a God who loves us, who wants to have this particular relationship with us. And we witness it in this gospel. We see this moment where Jesus is at the Passover feast and he's encountering more and more people who want to see him, even Greeks, outsiders. They want to see him. And what does Jesus say? He says, now is the time, now is the hour for the Son of Man to be glorified. And why? What is it that is going to be his glory? Is it his victory march as he travels through the city because he's become their new king? Is it his victory tour throughout the nation because he's toppled the Romans or outsmarted the Greeks or outthought any other great thinker? Is it this great moment where everyone will hail him as the greatest man alive because they all want his autograph because he has just wowed the world with his magnitude? No, he's about to celebrate his execution. He's about to celebrate his death. And he calls it his hour of glory. He speaks of this hour where he's about to be glorified, and truthfully, if we think about it from an outside perspective, what we're witnessing is the death of a man who is causing problems for an empire. We witness the death of a man who's causing discontent and restlessness within his faith. What we see is the silencing of a voice who made people uncomfortable. Unless we see the relationship. Unless we approach this moment. Unless we approach our faith in that genuine concern that this is a relationship first. That this isn't an execution for the sake of an execution. But someone who is willing to love us so much, so completely, so totally, that he's even willing to give his very life for our sake. That he's even willing to surrender his own life so that we might even have a chance at eternal salvation. The thing that amazes me constantly when we consider this is that in his hour of glory, in this great moment where God himself will show the greatest act of love possible, what is truly remarkable is that he makes this act of love. He surrenders his life. And it does scare him. But he surrenders his life, knowing full well that some people will walk away from this gift. Knowing full well that some people will choose not to take him up on this act of love. They will ignore it. They will look past it. They will try and minimize it and say that it doesn't affect them in their life. But even though not everyone takes it, he fully embraces this great act of love, this total gift of self, so that even though some will choose not to embrace it, those who do get that chance to know a loving God who was willing to sacrifice everything for him, who was willing to sacrifice everything so that they might live on in eternal joy and happiness in the kingdom of heaven. And so now there's our challenge. We have been shown this great act of love. Jesus is fully aware of what's going to happen next. It's not a surprise. It's not like the guards showed up and caught him off guard. But this great act of love has been shown to us. How are we going to respond? Will we be that witness of love to others? Showing them that we don't live in a church full of rules because rules sound exciting. But we live in a relationship with God where He is important enough to us that we want to invest ourselves in Him and allow Him to invest in us.